an emergency summit in Brussels about European security and Ukraine.
The ReArm Europe plan provides up to 800 billion euros for defense investment.
French President Emmanuel Macron says France's nuclear arsenal could be used to deter Russia.
Nuclear umbrella would serve as really very serious deterrence towards Russia.
How this could be a pivotal moment for Europe.
I think it's likely because we are really living in a kind of dramatic moment.
Today is Thursday, March 6th, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman.
We want a peace through strength. And this is the reason why I present today to the leaders the ReArm Europe plan.
European leaders on Thursday said they would stand by Ukraine and spend more on defense in a world upended by President Donald Trump's reversal of U.S. policies. EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the summit in Brussels and described her vision of rearming Europe and supplying Ukraine with weapons.
It gives the member states possibility to invest in the Ukrainian defense industry or to procure military capabilities that go right away to Ukraine.
We made a strong signal to Ukrainian people, to Ukrainian warriors, to civilians, to all our families. And it's great that we are not alone. We feel it and we know it. Thank you so much for everything.
According to NATO, Washington provided more than 40% of military aid sent to Ukraine last year.
If you didn't have our military equipment, this war would have been over in 2 weeks.
In three days. I heard it from Putin. In 3 days.
But Trump abruptly ended that arms supply following an Oval Office shouting match with Zelensky last week that led to a reversal in American support and stunned American allies. In the days since, that shock has hardened into a new resolve, driven by fears that Russia, emboldened by its war in Ukraine, may attack an EU country next, and that Europe cannot rely on the U.S. to come to its aid. In a televised address on the eve of the summit, French President Emmanuel Macron said, "I want to believe that the United States will stand by us, but we have to be ready if that is not the case." And in a sign of the gravity of the moment, Macron said that France was open to discussing extending the protection offered by its nuclear arsenal to its European partners. Moscow said Macron's speech contained notes of what it called nuclear blackmail. The French proposal was met with mixed reaction from other nations.
I think it's a very interesting idea, and we see to this proposal with high expectations because, you know, nuclear umbrella would serve as really very serious deterrence towards Russia.
That was Lithuania's President Gitanas Nausėda. So let's pull out a bit and get an overview of the changing mood and landscape in Europe. Joining us now from Paris to help us understand all of this is Nicholas Tenzer, a non-resident senior fellow at the Democratic Resilience Program at the Center for European Policy Analysis. Thank you so much for being able to join us to talk about this.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, emergency summit in Brussels today as the EU tries to navigate what seems to be a new world. The possibility that the United States might not be there for the first time since World War II. What do we know of what happened in Brussels?
Well, basically, I think there is at least a kind of awareness that basically we are at war with Russia. And I think it was really pointed out by President Macron last evening. And now I think this awareness is shared by most of the European leaders. And we have absolutely no time to lose. Time is of the essence right now because we have to arm swiftly. We have to take a very, I will say, tough decision, not only in terms of basically stepping up In terms of defense, and probably to reach, 4% of the GDP devoted to defense for the countries who are not at that stage, but also to create an industrial base for European industry. And as you say, this time is really unprecedented, because already there is a lot of alarm, including from myself, about the fact that the U.S. could basically not meet the security challenges that Europe is facing. It was really clear already in Georgia in 2008, and basically the U.S. did nothing. It was clear in Syria in 2013 when President Obama refused to enforce the red lines that he himself set. It was true also in 2014 when Ukraine already was attacked by Russia. And even since 2022, I think the U.S. Basically remained halfway, but so the Europeans. But now the challenge is completely different. It's not only the questions of abandonment by the U.S., but right now the U.S. is playing against us. The UN Security Council, when it comes to the P5 members, the permanent members of the UNSC, we were three against two, namely Russia and China. Now we are two against three, including the U.S. So basically, I think the future of Europe is at stake, and more immediately, the future of Ukraine. If we are not providing as swift as possible all the weapons Ukraine needs, not only to defend itself, but also to repel the Russian aggressor, then I think we perfectly know that we'll be the next on the list. And that's the kind of consciousness that the Europeans right now have.
Is this play with the this messaging? Does it play with the populations of Europe?
Well, basically, I think that this consciousness growing up, also in some countries like, I will say, Spain or Italy or Portugal, we are not probably as concerned as the others. And I know that it's completely new also for France since at least 1 year and a half to designate Russia as the enemy. But now we'll see exactly the same with Merz. Of course, we have some reluctant countries or some opposed countries like Hungary and by parts of Slovakia as well. But still, I think there is a kind of new unity. We had this unity after February 24, 2022, but this unity was not that strong. There were a lot of divergences. But no, I think we are reaching a momentum. Just see, you know, what Friedrich Merz, the new chancellor, said. We have certainly to find also a new way to protect Germany, Poland. The nuclear shield coming from the U.S. is no longer valid. We have certainly also to basically not to count on the American weapons as well. Not only because the U.S. Will stop, to deliver the weapons to the European countries, but because of all the restrictions in the use of American weapons or of weapons that have some American components. Just see what happened also in Ukraine, and only President Biden lift the restrictions after Trump was elected, but it was too late. And still at that time, there was a willingness for France and for the UK directly to strike, in depth of the Russian territory. But it was not allowed by the US. And what will happen now? So basically, if we want just to survive and also to ensure that Ukraine survives, we have certainly to get rid of the US weapons. And that's a real shock. And it implicates that the European economies just turn into war economies. And war economy is not only words. It means that we are able to transform some civil industries into weapons industries. It means that we have to attract, the money, and especially, the money by the European public. And we have more than ever to convince, I think, most of the Europeans that we are at war and that basically that their survival is at stake.
I saw Starmer today in a boat factory in England, and he was saying exactly what you're saying. We need to start making vessels. We need to make other things. We need to use our own industries to pivot to producing the kinds of arms and material that we need, not only to defend ourselves, but to protect Ukraine.
Yes, exactly. And it's nice that you talk about the UK, because I think when it comes to defense, basically it's not only the EU that is concerned. And in terms of military alliance, we certainly will have to create something, and hence, of course, the summit on Sunday, you know, in London. We have to also ally with the UK, with Norway, with Canada, and maybe we will have at the end of the day, to extend this alliance to countries such as Japan, South Korea, Australia. So, I mean, also the questions of the future of NATO is at stake as well. Because if we have not, I mean, the fact that the U.S. leaves NATO because I think that he won't, but if basically the effort made by the U.S. Within NATO, not only in terms of military spendings, but also in terms of technical capabilities, notably military intelligence. If this disappears, and I think it will, we will have certainly to replace NATO or to create a kind of new NATO. Just remember, for the EU, we had a defense and security common policy, and the Article 42.7 of the Treaty on European Union said and refers explicitly to NATO security guarantees, what we call common defense. But now we will have in the EU, with the UK, with Norway and others, we will have to build a new format to ensure this common defense, and that all the commitments of the so-called Article 5 of NATO Treaty basically could be met outside NATO.
I've heard that theory. It goes like this. If the U.S. view is now that there are only three powers, China, Russia, and the United States, that blocks like the EU need to expand to other areas and other partners to counterbalance or create in the aggregate that kind of global power?
Well, I think that's basically we will have to do that. We will have to aggregate, not saying that there will be a kind of unique government and unique foreign policy of all the EU member states plus UK and others. It means that certainly we will have to replace the US, and we will have also to confront not only Russia, but as you rightly said, also China in other parts of the world. Because certainly I think that if Russia wins in Ukraine and is able to dismantle the EU, certainly it will be a good kind of godsend for China as well. And so it means that we will have certainly to face many enemies, you know, at the same time. But just look, that was recalled by Prime Minister Donald Tusk, you know, of Poland. Basically, Russia is 140 million people. The U.S. is 320, and Europe is 500 million. Yeah. So basically, we have the power. We have the power. And I think that at the end of the day, it will be very beneficial also for Europe. Just remember also the Draghi report. The Draghi report was pointed out rightly, I mean, the lack of investment also, you know, in futures technology, in big tech, etc. And I think that through this war economy, probably Europe will step up dramatically in its capabilities also to create these new tech industries. Just remember that what in the US the DARPA did in the early 60s, DARPA was very instrumental, not only for the military sector, but also for the civil sector. And so I think that there will be a kind of very good effects on all industry, but also on employment, growth, etc., for Europe, if we are turning all economies into war economies.
Is this the kind of moment? Europe, the EU has always been contentious because there are different interests. Does this one of those moments where the EU could actually come together really for the first time in a single purpose?
I think it's possible. And I think it's possible, but even likely. I think it's likely because we are really living in a kind of dramatic moment. And I know, I mean, you're perfectly right in pointing out all those divergences, divergent interests of the EU member states. But no, it's no time, I think, to be competitors. It's time to have some shared views. Otherwise, it will be completely suicidal. I am not saying that all the EU countries immediately we embrace, I mean, the same stance and the same resolve. But I think is that if we consider, for instance, what France can do, but also Germany with Merz, but also the UK, Poland, the Baltic states, Nordic states, but also Spain and Italy right now, I think there will be this common base to advance on common interest, whatever, I mean, the political contentious views on many other issues, such as social issues, migration issues, etc. And I think that's basically this kind of, a new dimension for Europe. I remember Ursula von der Leyen was firstly elected the chairwoman of the European Commission. She was talking about, you know, the geopolitical Europe, but in fact it was void or it was meaningless at that time. No, it becomes a kind of new reality.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the insight. Really interesting.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure, really.
Nicholas Tenzer, a non-resident senior fellow with the Democratic Resilience Program at the Center for European Policy Analysis, joining us from Paris. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for spending this time with us. For news 24/7, you can go to our website, voanews.com. You can also download our apps from Google and Apple. In Washington, I'm Scott Wolterman.